My name is Dave Bella, and I'll be doing the first part of a session on organizations and profits. And we will be spelling profit as PH, as in Old Testament, rather than profits in terms of rate of return on your money, although maybe we'll have something to say about that too. And Hans, you'll be doing the second section, so we'll have, we'll split these into two tapes. We're going to start off, we're going to travel interesting journey, I think, here. I'm going to start saying a few words about holism, holistic, and what that means. And then a little bit of words about language and what that means. And a little bit of some words about systems, and then about some modern organizations. And we'll end up talking about the Old Testament prophets. Now, I think that's enough for this session, but let me go ahead and begin a little bit. First, on the nature of holism. The word holistic, of course, people are using that quite a bit today, or misusing it. And it kind of implies to us that somehow the whole, the collection of something, is more than just the sum of the parts. It's different than the sum of the parts. Now, we are going to agree with that concept today in a very special way. In an ethical and moral way, we're going to say that individuals who are moral and ethical can nevertheless form wholes which may be unethical and immoral. Okay. Now, let me give you an illustration of holistic. Most people assume or believe that water is H2O, two atoms of hydrogen, one of oxygen. And if the fire was going in there, we had to put it out, you'd throw on water, and you wouldn't think much of it. But throwing on water is very different than spraying on hydrogen and oxygen in the proportion of H2O. Of course, if we did that, we'd get an explosion. So in one case, we put out the water. In the other case, we go ahead and cause an explosion. What is the difference? It's because the way in which the hydrogen and oxygen relate to each other, it produces something holistically totally different than the parts by themselves. Okay? Okay, that's concept number one I want you to keep in mind. Now, concept number two has to do with language. We have to communicate and talk about some ideas, holistic ideas. And we have a problem here. We have a problem that the way we usually communicate in writing is all one-dimensional, you see. One big long line, the average book is about a half mile long. Okay, now we put it on a page, on pages, and we have rules like read from left to right. Oh, I understand in Hebrew it's the other way around. Is that correct? Okay. So in Hebrew it's the other way around, but we read from left to right, and then from top to bottom, and that allows us to break this long line of words up into nice, manageable pieces, because it would be rather awkward carrying around some half-mile long, rolled up one long line of words. But the fact remains that a book, is indeed a very one long line of words. And you could walk from here down a 10-mile creek and read a book. Okay? Now that poses a problem, because the world has a lot of loops and cycles and things going on in it. And when we try to explain it in one-dimensional, one long line, we tend to miss a lot of the loops and cycles and paradoxes and things that come back on you. Because we talk in one dimensions and we read in one dimension. Now, in my own area where I've done computer modeling, developed using computers and what they call systems modeling or systems analysis, we use mathematics to try and put in loops and cycles. Cybernetics is an area of science or inquiry where they speak of loops and cycles and their effect. There's only one problem with that, is very few people understand the language of mathematics. The other problem is, even those who understand it, by the time someone programs a complex computer program, the only one who really understands the program is the one who programmed that, and even then it's sometimes in doubt, okay? And so what happens is the person who knows a lot about computer programs and not much about the real systems out there ends up being the only one who knows what goes in the computer, and therefore, of course, he or she may not be very qualified to say whether that's a good model or not. Of course, they'll tell you it's a good model because they made it. That puts a problem. We're going to try and break through that, and we're going to do that by doing writing in two dimensions instead of one, so we can get loops and cycles, and I'll pass these out. Now, the people on the tape, you people are in trouble. You're going to have to look to see if you can get a copy of these diagrams, and or else you're going to really wonder what we're doing on this end of the microphone. So I'm passing that around, and I want you to go ahead and get a copy, and I'm going to read this two-dimensional writing to you. Two-dimensional. Now, you'll look at it, and it looks a little strange, but I think you'll see why I did it. Now, are there enough to go around? Do we need more? We need more? Huh? We have enough going around? Okay, here they come. I should have split them up and started around both sides. Okay. Now, the trick in reading this is you'll find out there's certain rules that are very different than reading, normal reading. Okay? In normal reading, what you have is you have to start in the upper left-hand corner and proceed all the way in lines, all the way to the bottom. Okay? Now, that's not how you look at a picture, is that correct? You don't look at a picture and go down it like you read a page, right? Well, this is more a picture. You have to look at it more like a picture. And someone looks at these loops and cycles, and I hope the people on the tape have it, have the diagram there, and they say, where do you begin? Well, the answer is you begin anywhere you want, okay? Begin anywhere you want. And here are the rules for reading this diagram. You start anywhere, and read the statement, and then follow an arrow. If you follow the arrow forward, you say, therefore. And then you read the next statement. If you follow the arrow backwards, you say, because. Okay? That's not such hard. That's not so hard. That's just as, not any more difficult than saying, start from the way we normally read. Read from left to right, top to bottom. Okay? Now, this is a description of a situation in a modern organization. I want you to think about what a modern organization is. First off, we have a pyramid type of an arrangement, and you have in this organization your professional people, let's say, the people doing the work, figuring out problems. We'll put them somewhere at the mid or lower parts of the hierarchy. Now, there'll be other people maybe below them, but let's not worry about that for the time being. And these people typically are specialists, correct? And on any particular project, they work on a portion of the project. And they work under mid-level managers. Now, the mid-level managers don't tell them how to do their work. They wouldn't say, change this number in your analysis. That would be considered inappropriate. But the mid-level managers, of course, make work assignments. And they manage the task, and they allocate resources, and they make assignments. And they say, work on this, solve this problem. And then we have the higher level management. So in our model that we're going to talk about, there'll be three levels in the pyramid. There'll be the professional level, the lower level. There'll be mid-level managers, and then higher level managers. And of course, there'll be more at the bottom of the triangle, organizational triangle, than at the top. Okay? Now, what we're going to do is we're going to examine an organization that ended up producing phony information. Let's suppose they've produced a report that really distorts the facts, and they produced this report to justify themselves. Now, that's not unusual for organizations to do that, but let's say they've actually maybe left out data that would be unfavorable to the organization. They've misused techniques. They've used the technique that produces a favorable answer, And now we're going to examine that organization to try and see why that happened. Okay, does everybody see this? Now, in the reading of this diagram, the word favorable means supporting the ambitions and survival needs of the organization. And what I will argue is that the organization tends to produce information that is favorable to its own survival. It's biased information. Okay? And yet, we're going to find out that it doesn't require anybody falsifying anything, anybody going out and doing something inappropriate, but the organization does it anyhow. Okay, let's take out the diagram and we'll read this, okay? So I'll read it and you just follow along and we'll start right in the middle, okay? Unfavorable information tends to be rejected or sent back. Okay, sent back down the hierarchy. Therefore, information passed up to higher levels is polished and screened to be more favorable. Okay? Therefore, information available to higher levels is favorably biased. Remember, the word favorable means supporting the information needs of the survival needs of the organization. Therefore, information passed down to mid-levels tends to be favorable. Therefore, information available to mid-levels is favorably biased. That's the mid-levels. Therefore, unfavorable information tends to be rejected or sent back. You get the loop? Okay, you got the loop. So the mid-level managers, their information is already biased. And all of a sudden, here's this thing that comes out. Wow, this is kind of strange. This doesn't fit what we know. Better have that checked over. That's what I mean by sending it back. Okay, information tends to be rejected or sent back. Okay, we've had that. And because information available to mid-levels is favorably biased, because information passed up to mid-levels tends to be favorable, because unfavorable information is often forgotten, because sources of unfavorable information tend to be isolated or reorganized out of existence, because resources tend to be allocated to tasks and people that produce favorable information, because management decisions are based upon information favorable to the organization, because information available to higher levels is favorably biased. See? Another loop. Okay, information available to higher levels is favorably biased. Therefore, sources of unfavorable information tend to be considered as troublemakers. Therefore, sources of unfavorable information tend to be isolated or reorganized out of existence. Therefore, information passed up to mid-levels tends to be favorable. Therefore, information available to mid-levels is favorably biased. Okay. Therefore, sources of unfavorable information tend to be considered as troublemakers. Because information available to higher levels is favorably biased, therefore, management decisions are based upon information favorable to the organization. Because information available to mid-levels is favorably biased. Therefore, unfavorable information tends to be rejected or sent back. Therefore, unfavorable information is often forgotten. Because sources of unfavorable information tend to be isolated or reorganized out of existence. You get the picture? Now you can loop any way you want in this diagram when reading it. You get the picture of it. Does this fit together? You get the idea of holistic. You can't look at any one of those statements by itself. You must wind your way through this diagram. Okay? Wind your way through, and eventually you get the picture. I didn't say you get the point. You get the picture. See, my imagery is more one of a picture where you look at the whole thing. We go around and look at Rudy's paintings up here, and we look at the whole picture. We don't start at the upper left-hand corner and scan as we would read a page. We look at the whole thing. Okay, any questions on this diagram right in here? Does it sound familiar to you or plausible? Okay. Any questions on it? Now, what I suggest is you take that and you read it through yourself a little more and switch. Go every other one of therefore and every other one of because. Doesn't matter. Make them all becauses. Make them all therefores. You just wind your way through this diagram. Okay. This is known as a system. A system. And you understand the system by working your way through the system until you say, aha, yes, I understand that system, and that's more than understanding any one of the parts. Do you get that? I want you to understand that. Okay? Okay, any observations on this diagram here? Because I want to make sure we kind of grasp this picture here. You get the picture that the information tends to get biased. Okay?
This is somewhat of a positive feedback system.
Well, positive in the sense of reinforcing, self-sustaining. That's what it is. Now, ethically, it's a negative system. So the word positive, you're right. It is a positive feedback system that it tends to protect itself.
Sort of like a family.
Oh, families can do this. Now, of course, that's not necessarily bad. You have self-reinforcing systems that, of course, can be good. This one is kind of a biased self-reinforcing system, self-sustaining system. Okay? It biases information. Now, this is kind of scary when you realize that most of the information we receive passes through these kinds of organizations. That's how it's developed. Okay? Which is rather scary. Information concerning the development of technology, information concerning, say, the military, information concerning all sorts of things. Okay? All sorts of things. Okay, anybody want to add anything before we put this page down? Okay, because this is a stepping stone in our discussion. Okay? Now, let's suppose you say, okay, I want to confront this system. I want to confront this. Let's suppose this happened and let's say a report came out that was very biased. Let's say this is the Corps of Engineers, and the Corps of Engineers wants to go ahead and build a dam. And they have to write an environmental impact statement. And what they do is they ignore all of the adverse impacts, and then they tend to trump up all the positive ones so that they can build their dam. Okay? And I can give an example if someone wants the Elk Creek Dam in Oregon, where this information happened. You know, if you want some examples, I can tell you on this. Okay? And one of the fortunate things, I think, about public institutions, and they are getting really ripped right now, is that you can criticize them. I can go out and say the Corps of Engineers did this and that. I could not say that about a private consulting firm because I'd be worried about getting sued. Okay. So for all of the criticisms we've had of public organizations, the one thing I have to, one very important thing that we have in our democracy here in America is that you can criticize public organizations easier than you can private ones, and you can get inside information easier. That may be. That's a scary observation that switching it to the private sector may be a way of protecting the organizations of power.
I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah. Okay, so shifting it out, the public sector, because then the internal information is privileged information. It belongs to the organization. When it's public, I can go in there and I can get it. And I did that with a Corps of Engineers, and I've criticized them, and I haven't been blacklisted by anybody in the Corps. I get along very well with them. It's actually a pretty healthy relationship that I can go ahead and criticize their organization. And actually, it's amazing when I go into these organizations quite often how honest the people are about the limitations of the organizations. So amid all of this discussion we've had lately about the evils of government, the inefficiencies of big government, and there's a lot of truth in that. I'm not denying that. There is also something that I worry about, that as organizations in our culture, it's more difficult to confront them if they're in the private sector than if they're in the public sector, based on my experience.
Yeah. And also,
that also raises for me the whole issue of press.
Press.
And the function of the press and what happens when government says the press is out to get us and therefore begins to attempt to favorably bias those who read what is there for them.
Sure. The government will tend to get information out that's, and certainly information released to the press, the system will work this way. The interesting thing you've got to recognize, though, is this does not require any group of people sitting down and say, let's bias the information. This is a system of true believers, public servants. Okay? And I'd like to illustrate that by now saying, suppose we now decide we're going to confront this organization. Let's suppose it's like the Corps, and they've turned out a report that is biased, or you feel it's biased, or it's some other organization, Environmental Protection Agency. I don't, you know, I'm more familiar with the public ones, like I say, because it's easier to study. They're easier to study. And let's suppose you've got that, and you decide you're going to go ahead and confront them. And that was one of the roles of the prophets, you see, in the Old Testament, was to confront the sources of power. Okay? So we are going to play, at least with a small p, the prophet role, and we're going to go out and confront the power. Power is that be. We're going to confront them and say, here is your biased information. How did that happen? How did you go ahead and reject this information that this troublemaker produced? And how could you do this? That's what we're going to do. And we've got all the facts down, and we're qualified to do it. And now we're going to jump into this system, and we're going to really nail them. Okay? Here we go. Next page. First thing we go is right to the top. We're not going to fool around. We've seen that this information was unfavorable information tend to be rejected. We've noticed that. We've got the information. It was leaked to us, let's say. I don't know. We found it somehow. So we go to a high-level manager and we say, why didn't you consider the unfavorable information your own staff produced? Aha, we got them now. Listen to their response. I'm not familiar with that information that you're talking about. I can assure you that my decisions were based upon the best information available to me. Is that true? Ah. Okay. We weren't as successful as what Nathan when he confronted David. Nothing was there. So, okay. We decide what we'll do is we'll go to the mid-level manager. Okay. Why didn't you pass the unfavorable information up to your superiors? Okay. I can't pass everything up to them. Based upon the information available to me, it seemed appropriate to have this information reevaluated and checked over. That reasonable? Everybody feel? Again, we're having difficulty being a Elijah or anyone else. All right, but we're persistent.
Well, it's reasonable, but it's not a complete in itself because the fact that it's reevaluated and checked over does not necessarily mean that you're not eventually get there.
Okay, but we got to go back down. So we'll go down the system and say, we go down the system one step to the professional technologist now. That's the exact reasoning we have. Okay, well, that's reasonable for that person, mid-level manager, but now let's go on and we'll see why wasn't the unfavorable information checked out and sent up back to your superiors? That wasn't my job. I had other tasks to do and deadlines to meet. True? Well, wasn't your job to do that and never got to you. Well, we decide to pursue one step further. We'll go to the source of that unfavorable information. Why didn't you follow up on the information that you presented? I only worked on a part of the project. I don't know how my particular information was used after I turned it in. I did my job. Even if I had all the information, which I didn't, there was no way that I could stop this project. It's got two things in that sentence. Look, I didn't have all the information. I can't make a decision to stop to change this. I only worked on a part of it. Somebody else had to make that decision because I only had a piece of it. Besides, he says, I couldn't stop this project, even if I wanted to, which I didn't, because I didn't have the information. Sound reasonable again? Okay, so we decide to change. We're still pretty persistent. So we decide to go back to the higher level manager again. Okay? Oh, by the way, for the people on the tape, we've got another another page here, so there's two pages to go along. Okay, we go to the higher level manager. Why has the organization released such a biased report? I resent your accusation. I have followed the development of this report. I have reviewed the drafts and the final copy. I know that the report can't please everybody, but based upon the information available to me, I can assure you that the report is not biased. That reasonable answer? Consistent with our diagram. Okay. We're still pretty persistent. We go now to the mid-level manager. Why has the organization released such a biased report? It's not just my report. My sections of the report were based upon the best information made available to me by both my superiors and my subordinates. And if you look at the diagram, you'll see there's two arrows coming in. Biased information comes in from the top and from the bottom. Okay, mid-level manager. Two arrows coming in there. Well, we go back to the professional technologist. Why has the organization released such a biased report? It's not my report. I was only involved in a portion of the studies that went into the report. I completed my task in the best way possible given the resources available to me. Another one. Well, we go back to the troublemaker. In quotes, okay. Why has the organization released such a biased report? Don't ask me. I'm not on this project anymore, and I really haven't kept up with the project. I turned in my report. It dealt only with a part of the project. Again, an honest response. Well, we decide to try one more time. We decide we're going to confront the organization just one more time, and so we go back all the way up to the top. Why was the source of unfavorable information, the troublemaker, removed from the project? We figured at least that implies some devious action. I hardly know the person. A lot of people have worked on this project. I must, of course, make decisions to keep this organization running. But there has been no plot to suppress people. On the contrary, my decisions have been objectively based upon the available information and the recommendations of my staff. A little competition up there. Okay? Sound reasonable? We go to the mid-level manager. Why was the source of unfavorable information removed from the project? I don't like your implications. I've got tasks to complete and deadlines to meet with limited resources. I can't let everybody do their own thing. We'd never finish anything. I base my recommendations and assignments on the best available information. That true? Yeah, it's true. Well, we try and move down the line again. We go to the professional technologist, one of the experts. Why was the source of unfavorable information removed from the project? We're getting a little tired of asking questions, but we're persistent. I'm not sure about the details because I don't work with him or her. I guess that it had to do something with a reorganization or a new assignment. She is a bright person, somewhat of an eccentric, but I've got nothing personally against her. Good person. Finally, we go to the troublemaker. Why were you removed from the project? My assignment was completed, and I was assigned to another project. I don't think that anybody was deliberately out to get me. My new job is less of a hassle. Who do we confront?
Maybe we'll get into this a little later, but each of these seem to be accusation defense statements. And I think, when we're accused, the first thing you get is a defensive thing. statement and not necessarily an analysis of the situation. Are we going to get into this as we go on?
Well, that might be one side of it, but I think the responses really aren't that defensive. There's a little bit of defensiveness in the responses. I think the responses are pretty honest.
And the only way they get together is in this system.
Yeah.
That's the system of getting together. The system of getting together. Now, possibly if you could get someone who had the breadth of professional understanding for the whole report, and you could isolate them and get them to really work on that the way you did, they might say, yeah, you're right, it is biased. And they would. I've met people in the organization that said, yeah, then what would you do? Then what would you do after that? Because I've been confronted by that many times. I go on up and say, hey, wait a minute, let's sit down here and corner. Say, look at the way you calculated this. Say, a benefit cost analysis. This, and this. All right, would you do that? Do you really think that's the best way to do it? And they say, it wasn't my job. I'll look at it and say, and they say, well, look, I'm not defending it.
But that's a person who attacks you.
Well, how are you going to confront someone that the thing is wrong?
You don't confront someone. You confront the facts.
Well, what do I say? Facts, you're wrong? What would you do?
Well, you zero in on questions concerning the outcome of the process.
All right, let's suppose I go and they've figured, let's say, a benefit-cost ratio. This is the way they do an economic analysis. And I believe that the technique was wrong in doing it. Now what do I do? And I can sit down and I could write up on the board and convince you that, yes, it was wrong. Now what do I do?
You start zeroing in on those portions that look suspect.
Well, the technique was wrong. The way they ended up, the way it was put together, they ended up borrowing benefits from existing dams, economic benefits. Now, what do I do next? Man, there's some complex math involved, but essentially it's inappropriate. And I go on out and I go to an independent economist and sit down, and we check it out, and he affirms, yes, that I was right. Now what do I do?
Well, I think the first step, is it's not an easy thing. I'm sure but the first thing is to convince people that it's wrong.
Who do I convince? I can convince you. I can convince the Sierra Club. I can convince the other people who are not favorable to the dam. Who would I convince?
Well, I guess if I were to answer that, my first statement would be to convince people within the system.
Now, where would I go in?
Anywhere.
So if I go to the management levels up at the top, I say, look, I'm not an economist. You know, you're getting this theory up here. So we're fine. You got to get this theory up in here. It's been a while since I've been around. I've got management, and I can assure you, I've got a good, competent staff of people who are working right in here. So, say, look, what do I do then?
How about the state legislature? That's where the report goes, isn't it?
The state legislature. So I go to the state legislature, and of course. You know how much time they have.
There's a hearing. Describe the hearing.
Okay, you want to go to a hearing? I'm taking an actual example right now.
I've seen many of them. I know exactly.
I'll pursue any way you want to go on, because I've been. So we go to a hearing, okay? State Water Resources Board. You go down to the hearing, okay? Now, I've gone ahead and confronted whoever would listen to me in the organization, okay? Usually the person who will listen to me is lower down on the scale because they still have the technical competence to look at. Managers lose the technical skills. They do, and they gain managerial skills. That's true. So I go down to I get them to look it over. They say, yeah, it seems right to me. I think your criticisms are correct. And says, well, I don't know what you're doing. I'm not working on the project, and I wasn't working on it when this came out. Well, who was, when you have a hard time finding. So I've at least contacted a few people within the organization. So then I go to the hearing.
But can I interrupt one thing? Because we always come back to that who was. And whenever we start dealing with the who, it's in my experience that we get defensive answers. We start, we get into the blaming game.
Well, I didn't find anybody really, I'm very sensitive to that. I wasn't blaming anybody. But who, again, I think the point of accountability is important too.
Well,
suppose I get someone who says, yeah, I agree with you. Now what do you do?
What do we do about it? No, the question. What do we do about it?
Okay. I don't know right now, to tell you the truth.
I'm curious, are you still in the midst of pursuing the Corps of Engineers or about the dam problem?
Yeah, I've been in it. Yeah.
Okay, have you found some successful ways? Or are you just, are you asking us to grapple with...
What I'm asking you to grapple with fundamentally is I think what you got at, it would be so much easier if someone, schemed and did it wrong, because then you could find them and you could nail them. But these are all good people. And that's one of the most frustrating things to do, is say, how could they do that? And you read this report, boy, those phony, and I go in there full of fire, and I go in, I meet all these great people. They're really good people. Huh?
And they had a rationale on why they did it the way they did.
Oh, yes, and they say, hey, look, I'm in this or that, and yet they don't disagree with you. Based on the information I had, based on this, and then if you finally go to the hearing, and I had this, there's all these people lined up and you've got so many minutes to go, and here you've got this big hearing and every contractor is out there, we really need this dam. Of course, they've got the business down there and the local water district, they need the dam, and all these people, we have low employment in the area, we need the dam and so forth, and I'm standing in line there. And here you've got, there's a whole bunch of people there, you've got so many minutes there that you're supposed to go on out and present your information. What do you do? You're not going to go through an economic analysis up there? People say, they're up there on the board, they don't know.
What you're saying then in the hearing or whatever is that creates the pressure pot. That's when you're really up against it. When you're really up against it.
So you try it.
You
try a few things. You try to at least read in the record to put your own qualifications down there, and then say, I want the record to show that this is done wrong. Okay, fine. Bam. Next speaker.
I would say that the hearing is also part of the system.
That's right. The hearing is part of the system. We could go out and we could take this, and the hearing would be part of the system. Now, in this one case, we did have Congressman Jim Weaver from Oregon, who Dan was in his district, his staff looked into it, and he did come out against it. And that takes a lot of guts for a politician to come out against the pork barrel project. Okay, the point, though, that we get back to is you can't come to grips with who to hold accountable, who to confront, or who to even get to agree with you. You go to all these little discussions, and everybody's very nice, and they agree with you, and they say, well, look, this is what I have. And you come away from this you're saying, well, that was a real nice time I had with these people, but the basic fact is this is still biased information. You see? You get the problem here. That's another thing. Although some of these projects, the analysis has been going on for 20 years, and then you get into another problem, which says, well, I'm just using the information that was available to me when I came on this job. I said, well, where did that come from? Well, I really don't know. That was done before I got here. You say, well, why didn't you redo the study? Well, they didn't allocate a new funding to go ahead and redo the study, so we had to leave it like this. So in time, there's also this tendency to select those kinds of analyses that support the organization and not the other way around. You get the problem.
Well, let me just share one. I don't understand it, but I suppose somewhere down the line, someone started with wanting this dam, and they had to go through the reverse. They had to somehow start the ball rolling in favor of the dam, and once that started, then you can't stop it. So, in either way, that's some of the difficulty, no?
Well, you'd have a hard time saying someone. There's a system set up there.
Okay, but I'm saying somewhere that has to get generated also. So once the ball gets rolling, to stop or to start the ball takes an awful lot of energy,
right.
And once it gets in the system, it's hard to get a handle on it.
Now, I would say that this probably goes back 20, 30 years on the dam, maybe longer than that.
Okay, so I'm saying that took a long time to get enough energy to move.
That's right. and enough energy to evolve the system that was resistant enough to, so it could stop. It gains momentum. It gains momentum. And yet all of the early stages seem so innocent. So innocent. A simple little thing here, a letter to congressman here, this, that, a law that had nothing to do with those dams, a policy off someplace over here. And then in time it begins to come together to form a system that is almost unbeatable. And yet the genesis of that system is just these little actions that really look harmless.
Conservatives could say that about the liberal movement.
Of course. Yeah, this thing, you know, I mean, is building a dam liberal or conservative? I'm not sure.
Is it safe to say then that the only way to confront and stop something like this is to create a difference in reaction to it?
I don't know. I think the point we're trying to raise right here, because we're going to go back and we're going to find a time when the prophets were faced with some similar kinds of situations. And they, in the Old Testament, were, and Hans will get on this a little bit more, they were aware that you simply couldn't have responsibility, moral responsibility, at the individual level. Okay? One of the reasons why it's a paradox for us is because we tend to think of moral responsibility and ethics strictly on the individual level. The idea of confronting the whole system and saying, that is wrong. That, you know, that doesn't become aware to us. We have to go more into the Old Testament where maybe a whole people were saying, you are wrong, the whole people. And I'm sure if you went into the system of those people, they'd all, well, wait a minute, I'm just doing this. I just grow my fruit here and I sell it and I just do this and I just do that. What's wrong with that? Okay? And that's probably why the prophets were considered a little bit crazy too. Okay? Because they were in the system too. And I don't think I'd want to be a prophet back then, or even now for that matter. Okay? So, what we're ending up with as kind of an introduction to the Old Testament prophets is taking a contemporary situation. See? That's why this is kind of a Bible study, really. But it's a lot of preparation. You see, what we're trying to do is, but with this example here, is to kind of prepare the way. I'm kind of like John the Baptist, okay?
It may lead up to crucifixion.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. We'll see what happens.
I don't like this.
Yeah, that's right. We're not. See what happens when you confront the system, see? But nevertheless, what we're trying to do here is to take a contemporary situation that you're familiar with, take some language you're familiar with, and present a paradox to you. A paradox that reveals some of the limitations of how we approach problems, and the particular limitation is that morality and ethics and behavior is an individual kind of thing only. And what we're saying, no, that's not the case. The whole must also be addressed, not just the individuals. That doesn't mean you let the individuals off. But the whole also has to be addressed. And that kind of doesn't quite fit our culture, because we like to address, we think of individualism as where the source of values are, the subjective, the inner feelings people have. You see how it all comes into the individual. The inner feelings, that's where values are and so forth, in the eye of the beholder and all of that stuff, rather than in the system that the people are in. Okay? So what we're trying to do right now is prepare kind of a way, of a contemporary way, where we see a contemporary problem, so that when we go back to the Old Testament and we read what's happening there, in their systems, which are different than our systems in some ways, but similar in others, okay, we can maybe grasp the frustration that they had. Okay? And we can maybe understand some of the words that they had, that they spoke and that they dealt with, and how they probably didn't want to get involved in this system because they knew they'd come up with this kind of stuff and they'd try to get away from it. This is a very frustrating system to deal with. And they'd rather just kind of, some of them just would rather just be a part of the system. I don't want to confront this system. I just want to stay in my own part. And that's a very human response, right? Okay.
Are you holding out that you could have a moral people in an immoral system?
Sure.
Well, you get kind of confused when you start saying sometimes they're participating. You could have everybody not participating and have an immoral system.
Yes. Well, you get everybody doing what's proper.
Right. Reinhold Niebuhr wrote a book called Moral Man and Immoral Society.
That's probably like the sexist language. That's why I do.
Oh, okay. Well, he means the man of prosperity.
Sure.
But that's, Frank's point is right on the money. That's, I think, what Niebuhr is saying. And he has another book called The Irony of American History. And that's a very important word for him because he thinks there's still hope. The other word would be the tragedy of American history. In other words, that the way the system is set up is to self-destruct. And of course, we're all asking that question today, I think. Are we on a self-destruct course? And so I think I love Dave's pressing us to say the system itself is not, no one is really acting, in terms of the system at least, irresponsibly. Right. And there is a...
I mean, they may also, but that's not needed
for
the system to produce something evil. Now, there may be evil within the system also.
Otherwise, we could really see it. We could say, well, the reason for the whole problem is this one person.
That's right.
But then you could find it out, right?
And that's kind of what happened with the Nixon kind of thing. You know, once we got rid of Nixon, then, you know, he could... And then he felt kind of bad. He felt... wait a minute, I'm just being the scapegoat. In a sense, that was true. Now, I don't mean to not hold him accountable for what he did, but when you look at the system that he had there, you can understand it a little more.
You're sort of a product of that system also, then.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We're all in it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now what we're trying to do is use this discussion as an entrance into some sort of discussion of the prophets, where you can feel that maybe they really have something to say to us, okay? That's relevant to us. Okay? And they had to deal with these systems, their systems, but they had these kinds of systems going on, and paradoxes and problems of who do you confront and so forth and so on. And you can see how they wouldn't want to do it. At least I would. Does everybody get that feeling now? Okay. That's the idea, is to try and make it real what the Bible has to say in terms of the prophets, so we can learn something from them. And then maybe we can be better prophets in today's world. Okay? Has everybody got that? Are we at a good stage now for the entrance into phase two? Okay, that will be the end then. Unless someone had, you have some comments?
No, an idea. I wonder if we could share some brainstorming of other possible examples, like the one Dave gave of the Elk Creek Dam. I want to give one, and maybe that'll trigger your ideas. For example, about X number of years ago, I was involved in a community where they decided to build a church. And that was, I think, a planning which screened out unfavorable ideas, because it was a neat thing that we were going to build a church. Well, now the church is a building that's much too big and has lots of problems about it. And when you look back, you say, gosh, why didn't we think twice about building this grandiose building for ourselves, etc. And I think on a small scale, that illustrates this, because in fact, it was religious people, and they were doing a good thing. They had all sorts of high, noble motivations. I wonder if we could just brainstorm some either small or large, comparable, concrete illustrations so that we feel the pressure, the pinch of this. Dave and I talked about the Holocaust. We've been into that a little bit this week. And that surely illustrates this, because there's it isn't just three levels, but there's many, many, many levels. And you go to Europe and you ask people, well, did you know about it? And almost everybody says, we didn't know. And I don't think they're lost. We didn't know. We just did our job.
Based upon the best available information.
That's right.
What I was doing was...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wonder if the other people have some ideas to say, oh, your model really rings a bell for this. Let me tell you about it.
Well, recently there was the story about the gas tank in the cabin of the pickups, and that unfavorable information was suppressed by some level of the organization. This is unfavorable information put in a cubbyhole, never brought out and studied again, so they went on and kept putting the gas tanks in there. You know, they had one before seeing that. It was quite dangerous. And that was either Ford or General Motors.
Native American reservation.
Yeah.
that whole institutionalizing of that. It could be someone had, and the people had moral thoughts, I don't know, maybe they really just wanted to genocide the Native Americans, whatever the effect was that anyway.
I think of Vietnam and cultural response
sure.
to the veterans. As well as the whole peace movement, that there has to be an evil being, and obviously it's the Pentagon and the military. They're terrible people.
Yeah.
It blew my mind when I met some really fine Rotsy fellows in Trump.
That's right. That's the thing that really blows your mind. And that's why we have to grow up with these systems, or what will happen is we will polarize our own Christian community. Because the people, you know, will just be condemning people, and yet they won't feel like they're really, you know, what am I doing? You know, and they're fragmented.
What bothers me is I'm trying to come up with arrows that could allow an organization to function and end up moral. And this system mm-hmm. seems to be very immoral, generating system. And I think back to the church, you know, are we caught up in the same thing?
If the church is called to be centers for justice and hard kind of loving, and my hypothesis would be it isn't, then are we really set up so it can't happen or won't happen?
Might.
Church politics. There was a bishop here last week, and we talked about that a little bit. But you think of who the people are who get to be upper level management people in the church, and how they get there, and how rarely it is a person, you know, who has that same kind of charisma which you have down at another level, that I think many people have really dim thoughts about the institutional church because of that type of self-perpetuating hierarchical structure.
Sure. And yet, the selection of those people will always probably be based on very good reasons.
Yes, right. It's moral, it's democratic, it's...
proper.
I'm becoming aware of it. Another predicament in a company where we're associated with one of the higher level management people who's a extremely moral person. But it's a clothing manufacturing company who are geared to all upper middle class people buying their clothing. However, the company has made the decision, or some portion of the company has made the decision they can no longer hire American people to employ. You know, they can't employ these people because they want too much money. So they are hiring Koreans to make the clothing. But, you know, it's becoming a vicious cycle where they can't pay the people to make it who they want to buy it. And, you know, it's like a real mess. And I don't know what's going to happen with that kind of... I know there's a lot of companies in that kind of situation.
The example I...
All we want to do is make a buck.
Yeah, the example I had was on the Nestle's corporation.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And selling the infant formula and advertising mm-hmm. for it in a way that was very clever, but not very moral in my estimation. I talked to John Connor, who is... Presbyterian Church. He's the moderator of the Presbyterian Church for several years ago. That's the highest position up there. And he's a campus minister in Corvallis. And he went over there, because he was one of the leaders in the boycott, and he went over there to talk with the top brass. And he says, they were fine people. Very, very fine people. He says, you were really impressed with their sensitivity, their concern. And so we talked about this filtering of information and how they were really kind of trapped in the system. They said, yeah, that's true. I said, well, suppose you could get them to put on some jeans and old clothes or whatever, and just get them to go out into the field and talk with the nurses and talk with the people actually in the hospital, who that's where the concern is being raised from. He stopped and he thought, and he said, yeah, I think I could, if I took the chairman of the board or whoever it would be out there, I could show him that yeah, he was wrong. I said, then what? He says, he probably couldn't have done a thing. In other words, even the person at the top, they got the information. The system was more robust than the person at the top. That was from the person who was one of the leaders of the boycott. Okay, so you see the problem. Now, actually, when I study organizations, to me it's amazing that they're not worse than they are. So there must be some prophecy going on in here. There are deeply concerned people, and I think there's one message in this is that when you do confront an organization, that a sensitivity for the real people in that is important. Don't just cross off those people, because they may be very good people, even those associated with something that you consider to be very bad. And that's important to remember, or else what happens is we as a community fragment. And if there isn't a church community where you can talk about these kinds of things, and we can come together out of a system like that, then where is it? It's not in the university. You can say that. Okay. So that's important to realize.